Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Factory Must Grow, Episode 8. Today we are joined by Rygard. Rygard, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm a little bit tired, but I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, because you were looking at the Northern Lights, right? Or trying to?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Beautiful. So for those who don't know, Rygard is a prolific mod dev in the Factorio community, known in particular for a lot of his quality of life mods, which we've highlighted a few of on this podcast. And he's also done a bunch with the Factorio GUI. He was known as the king of GUI for a while, and maybe still is. And so prolific with his mod dev, in fact, that he got hired by Woob. And so we have an actual Woob dev with us today. And so today we'll start with another mod spotlight, discuss the Factorio Friday facts, and then we'll hear from Rygard all about some of his opinions on quality of life and how he's done all the modding that he's done. So we'll start with the mod spotlight, which is Belt Visualizer. This one was made by Code Green, who's also well-known in the modding community, in November of 2022. And it was almost certainly inspired by your Pipe Visualizer mod. Do you know for sure if that's true?
Yeah, actually, there's a bit of a story behind that. Belt Visualizer was a direct result of Code Green watching me try to make a Belt Visualizer and saying, wow, that sucks, I can do it better. And he did.
All right, so failure is sometimes the best inspiration for success. But yes, we talked about Pipe Visualizer before, I think, on the podcast, which is great. And Belt Visualizer does something very similar, where you can, you know, hit H, which is the default hotkey on a belt, and it will highlight all the belts in front of and behind it that either split off from it in the future or merge into it in the past. And you can also switch it to show just one lane or the other, and you can even, I think, I actually haven't installed it yet. I really should, because you can follow the filter splits. So like if you're holding an iron plate and then you hit the belt, it'll only follow like splitters that have the iron plate filter.
That sounds familiar. I don't really know for certain.
Yeah, I saw that on the website. So yeah, that one's pretty cool. And you guys should definitely get both Belt Visualizer and Pipe Visualizer if you haven't already. They're great quality of life mods. They make it a lot easier to keep track of your spaghetti, for sure. So that's mainly what I use Pipe Visualizer for when, you know, you're playing modded Factorio with 500 fluids. It's pretty crazy. It also works with Factorissimo, apparently. What are your thoughts on Belt Visualizer?
You should have seen the one I was trying to do. This one is so much better than what I was trying to do. You know how Pipe Visualizer has the overlay mode? I was trying to make something similar, and then I actually got something working where it just put a line on each, or actually just put a circle on each belt, just as a test. And then I saw that, and I was like, ah, this isn't working, and I scrapped the idea. And then Code Green's like, I can do it better. That's why
awesome.
Belt Visualizer doesn't have a overlay mode, because it's just way too busy and it's not very helpful for belts.
Right. Yeah. When you've got, you know, pipes, there's only a few and they're very distinct colors for the fluids, but with belts, they're everywhere. So I can't imagine seeing them all at the same time would be helpful. But one at a time is great. And that's actually, these days at least, mostly how I've been using Pipe Visualizer is I just use the, you know, I use the H key to hold one pipe network visualized at once, sometimes two.
That's pretty great.
But yeah, so let's move on to the recent FFF. So this is Factorio Friday Facts 410, titled Rocket Turret and Target Priorities. Both pretty exciting things, and kind of the title says it all. It's pretty straightforward. They announced the rocket turret. It does what it says. It turrets rockets. It's a 3x3 building. It has 15 to 36 range, depending on the quality. It shoots any type of rocket, including the atomic bomb. They didn't mention anything about a minimum range, though. Do you know if the atomic bomb is just going to blow up our own bases?
That's for you to find out.
Okay, awesome. Yeah.
Yes. But the people very quickly caught on to the fact that, like, yeah, the atomic bomb has this radius and the rocket turret's default radius is this, so it's kind of dangerous to use it.
Yeah, especially, I don't know, at least the default rockets are homing rockets, and if the atomic bombs are homing too, they could shoot at something that's far enough away to not damage your stuff, and then it runs closer and the rocket follows it. That could be a problem.
It can get pretty dicey.
So yeah, I'm expecting to see some fun videos once the expansion releases on that. They also mentioned tweaking the ammo for rockets to not use electronic circuits, because copper is a little more scarce in space, and you're going to want these in space to take out the big asteroids. And specifically for taking out those big asteroids, they mention you can set target priorities, which is kind of like how you set filters for inserters, but it's not a whitelist by default. It's just setting, you know, from left to right, it'll prioritize those targets over other targets. And then you can set it to only shoot those things, which then becomes like a whitelist, and it won't even fire at other entities, which is pretty nice, obviously, so you're not wasting rockets on like small biters and stuff. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. They also teased in the FFF that there's another part of the Space Age expansion where target filtering plays a crucial role, but that's for another week. And I'm guessing, and I'm not going to ask you because you probably know, but I'm guessing that it's flying enemies. That's my guess. And you need rockets to shoot flying enemies or something like that. Some sort of enemy that can get past your defenses in a non-standard way. That's my guess. But, you know, we'll see. It'll be teased hopefully soon. I guess we'll see. And then one last thing they mention is you can connect turrets to circuits. So you can enable or disable turrets based on circuit connection. You can set priorities of, actually, I don't know what that meant. What did I say? Set priorities. Oh, you can set target priorities, right, with the circuit. So you could like circuit connect a turret and switch it from preferring to shoot behemoth spitters to behemoth biters or something. I'm trying to imagine like when that would be useful, but it's pretty cool that we can do it. I'm sure there are, you know, all sorts of things you can do with mods with that too. You can set if unlisted targets are ignored. So that's like the whitelist versus just priority list thing. Basically all the settings you can do can just be controlled by circuits. And then also you can read the ammo count, which is useful, especially for artillery and artillery. You can't set priorities because apparently the targeting system works different for those, but you can still read the ammo count and enable and disable those as well via circuits. So that's pretty cool. They mentioned the rocket turret is released only for Space Age purchasers, but the target priorities and the circuit connections for turrets are going to come to everybody with the 2.0 update. Do you have anything else to add with your thoughts on that? Or
no, you pretty much covered it. All I will say is that I don't know what they meant by you'll need target priorities for a certain feature. I guess I haven't come across that in my development activities yet, so it's going to be a surprise to me as well.
Sweet. Okay. Well, we'll all look forward to that spoiler then. Okay. So let's kind of move on to getting chatting about modding with you. So you've been a mod dev for a long time, but let's go a little bit further back than that. How did you get into gaming in general?
So I'm the youngest of seven children. And my entire family is full of nerds. My dad was a big video game player of like, especially like Warcraft 2. He played a lot of that. So even from the get-go, like my family was among the first people to have a home PC. My older siblings grew up playing like Mario Teaches Typing and stuff like that. So video games have been in our family for ever. I grew up playing on Nintendo consoles. I would play Ocarina of Time. Well, play is a strong word. I wasn't very good at video games, so my older brother would play them all for me, and I would just watch him like the younger brother I was. But yeah, I've been playing games for my whole life. I can't imagine my life without it.
That's awesome. Yeah, some of my earliest memories with gaming was Jazz Jackrabbit on, you know, was that a DOS game? I think it was a DOS game. And then like the old Duke Nukem, and the oldest RTS I remember was actually not Command and Conquer, but Earth 2140, which just has some super special memories for me. But yeah, that's great. So when did you start with Factorio?
Started Factorio in May 2017. It was right after the 0.15 release. All of my older brothers were into the game at that point, and they all got together for a LAN party at my parents' house, and they all played through 0.15 and got the There Is No Spoon achievement.
Nice.
That was right after, because for those who aren't aware, 0.15 is when the game was changed from having four science packs to seven, I think it is.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was a big change.
Before you had red, green, blue, and then you had alien science with the alien artifacts, and then that's 0.15 is when it was changed to the current way of automation, logistic, chemical, yada yada. That was a big change, and was a lot of fun for them because it was the game was different. But I was watching them play this game, and I thought it looked really interesting. And my brothers were all like, yeah, you should come play with us. So they got me one of the DRM free copies from our website and just put it on my computer. And then I joined their LAN game and I played Factorio for 7 hours straight.
That sounds like the story of most of us when we discovered Factorio.
Yeah, it probably wasn't that long. I think I recall going to bed because I was still in high school. Yeah, it was a ton of fun. One of my brothers had been trying to convince me to get into the game for probably a year at that point because he saw me doing Minecraft Redstone. He's like, oh, you'd love Factorio, dude. You like, it's right up your alley. And I was like, no, I just want to play Minecraft, dude. Leave me alone.
Yeah, that's funny. So then when did you start modding Factorio?
I started modding right after the 0.17 release. That would be March 2019. I wanted to make mods because I wanted a tape measure. My first mod that I ever made was Tape Line. And I was unsatisfied with all of the existing tape measure mods on the portal. So I loaded up the API documentation and I sifted through it and tried to figure things out. And the Discord channel was especially helpful, the mod making Discord channel. I owe a lot to that channel and the people in it for getting me up to speed.
Yeah, for sure. So was that the first modding experience you ever had, or had you modded other games before?
I technically modded Minecraft by following a tutorial, but that doesn't count. So this was my first ever kind of mod. It wasn't my first program, though. I made some rain meter skins. Are you familiar with what rain meter is?
It's an audio thing, right?
Rainmeter is like a desktop customization thing for Windows. Oh, okay. You can like make skins and put them on things. And what I made for that was a suite called Modern Gadgets, where it's like, you know, the all CPU meter and network meter and disks meter from Windows 7. I made modern replacements for those. That was my first foray into actual real world programming. And then Factorio modding was my second experience with that.
Sweet. And at that point, so in 2019, when you started modding Factorio, were you going to school yet for programming or?
No, I was just working. I was a lifeguard at the time. So I was just working pretty much full time and just doing things in my spare time.
Awesome. Awesome. So then with the tape line, that's actually really interesting to hear that's your first mod, because that's one of my favorites of yours. It's so helpful to just be able to, you know, either do the immediate measurement of the one that just disappears on its own, where you're like, oh, okay, how many units is it from this thing to this thing? And then you just do that real quick and it's over. Or you can do the one where it stays if you're trying to measure out like a square area for your rail blocks or whatever. Why? So like you mentioned that, you know, you found all of the current tape line or measurement mods lacking. And then obviously, like, as you made more and more mods, they focused on the quality of life, you know, category. Is there a specific reason why that category is the one you've made the most of? Is it just what you want to do? Or tell us more about that.
Yeah, I'd say quality of life is the main mod that I focused on, because I'd be playing the game and I'd come across some minor annoyance that really bugged me. And then I said, oh, I could just make a mod to fix that. That's how most of my mods came about, was that exact process. For example, Recipe Book came about because I was trying to use FNEI and I hated it. So I was like, you know, I could do this better. And so I tried and I think I succeeded, but not everyone agrees. We'll get to that in a little bit, but
I have had many conversations about Recipe Book versus FNEI. I find that really interesting because a lot of mods are more content focused. Have you ever considered making a content mod, or is it just like not even interesting to you?
I've never really considered it. I actually do have an idea for a content mod I want to make that will rely on Space Age. That's like way down the pipeline because it's going to be a lot of work. I mostly focus on quality of life because that's what is immediately beneficial to me. And I'm not very good at this game, so I get burnt out very easily. So I didn't play very many overhaul mods. In fact, Space Age is only the second overhaul mod I've ever played to completion. The first being Crastorio. So content mods weren't really up my alley, and I'm also not an artist, so I'd have to figure that out, and it's a lot more work to make one of those.
Yeah, for sure. The art is a big challenge. I know one of the guys in my Discord's working on his mod too, and like the art is a big question mark, and you either have to use things like angels, you know, assets, and then you're kind of copying assets from another mod, which, you know, if the licenses are fine, that's okay legally, but it doesn't feel quite as original when you're just using someone else's art, and that's or you got to pay someone a lot. That's always tough. But yeah, and I also find it, you know, it's like it's almost a different category of your brain when, because a QOL mod, you know, you're looking at, oh, I'm playing the game and this thing bothers me. I'm going to make a mod so that now I'm not bothered anymore. And it's almost a reactive creative process rather than a proactive one, because you're not looking and going, oh, I'm going to make a mod today. What should I make? You're actually just playing the game and then something happens and you're like, oh, I should make a mod.
Yes, that's precisely it. It's a very reactive process for me. In fact, that's actually pretty close to how we develop Factorio as well. A lot of the quality of life features come about as us playing, like playtesting the game and saying, oh, that was annoying. We should fix that.
Yeah, and that comes out in the FFFs. There's a lot of paragraphs where it's like, so we realized that there was not, you know, enough of this, and then we fixed it. And yeah, it's cool that, you know, the people who are developing Factorio are actually playing it and fixing those annoying things, because you'd think that would be normal in game development. But I think we all know with how many games we've all played that that's not true. There's so many games out there where it's like, did the devs even play this? Like, the thing that everyone is doing is so annoying to do.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate reality that most game devs don't play their own games or don't find them fun.
Yeah. So one other question just about kind of your categories of mod making. You also were known and probably still are for being really good at the Factorio GUI. Is that a particularly hard thing to modify in Factorio?
It's not particularly difficult. There's just a lot to it. I guess that's another way of saying difficult, but it's not difficult for me, so it's hard for me to articulate the problems with it. I'd say the API is a little bit cumbersome to use. I've written a lot of abstractions on top of that API to make it easier for myself to program mods. But I'd say the hardest part is making it fit in with the vanilla GUIs, because you'll see a lot of mods like FNEI, for example, that were made before the Factorio GUI refresh happened, and they never truly updated to the new one. So there's a lot of like redundant frames, and it just doesn't fit in very well. Styling is very difficult because you have to, there's no like built out style guide that we made. It's all intuition. And you have to look through the like style prototypes list and figure out which ones go where. Most of my experience figuring all that out was using the GUI inspector tool. If you hit Control F6 in the game, you'll get this GUI inspector tool that'll tell you all the styles and properties of the thing you're hovering. So I would just hit that tool and I would hover over something in the vanilla interfaces that I wanted to copy and then copy those things.
Gotcha. And that's really cool. From there. So trial and error was the path to success there. Yeah, yes, I mean, definitely. I've made one mod and it's a few lines of code and it makes lamps brighter. I guess, no, I made one that modifies a few things in Pyanodons too, but that kind of coding just goes way over my head and I have nothing but respect for you guys for that. So one mod I want to talk about for a little bit in specific is Recipe Book, because that's probably one of the bigger ones you've made. It's a little bit more prevalent in, I don't know, in the community, because in some ways it's like an FNEI competitor / replacement / different thing. And it even has been spoiled to some level. You know, I don't remember which FFF it was in, but it's kind of coming to vanilla Factorio in the Space Age expansion. So yeah, how did you get started with Recipe Book?
I kind of touched on this earlier. Recipe Book spawned as a direct result of me disliking FNEI. Because I thought FNEI was ugly and it was slow, and those both are still true. like I have a lot of respect for the FNEI developer because it's like there's a reason it's the most popular one. It's really easy to use. It's like gets out of your way. But I had personal issues with it, and the main issue I had with it was that it didn't fit the style. And I'm very particular. I want things to look nice, so I wanted to set out to make my own.
Yeah, so how long did it take you to kind of develop the first iteration of Recipe Book from when you set out to do it?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think it was only like 1 or 2 months. The first version of Recipe Book was a lot simpler than it is now. Let me see. I'm actually looking at the Git repository.
Nice. Yeah. So did you set out, because I know Recipe Book kind of does everything. It like compiles all the information almost about every data piece in the game between recipes, items, entities, technologies, and probably another list of things or two that I'm forgetting. Did it have all those from the get-go, or did you add more of those in? Was it just recipes for a while?
It was just recipes for a while. I didn't even have crafting machines at first. It was the first version was actually quite bad. It had like a little like tiny search window that had like a little list of results, and then you'd click that and open another window. Because I was like sort of trying to copy FNEI, but I was doing it in a different way. It was bad.
Well, it's gotten a lot better since then. So obviously, like, you added more and more features. And are we now on, like, is it Recipe Book 3? Is that what you would call it? Or
Right now it's 3. I'm slowly but surely working on 4. It's there technically. I just need to add all the information, which is a super tedious process, so I'm procrastinating. But yeah, it's gone through a lot of iterations.
yeah, so with the Recipe Book stuff in general, I know that there's something similar in Space Age. So when did that kind of, was it right? Was it before you started at Woob that they were kind of already working on adding that into the base game, or was it you coming onto the team that kind of was part of that? Or, and it's okay if you can't talk about certain aspects of this. I get that.
Actually, a lot of people are under the assumption that I spearheaded Factoriopedia, but that's actually not the case. Factoriopedia started well before I joined the company. In fact, it started before I even started the 4.0 version of Recipe Book. I intentionally distanced myself from it because I was like, oh, I want to rewrite Recipe Book, but I don't want to like take any inspiration from Factoriopedia. So I tried not to look at it as much as I could. We ended up doing most of the same stuff, as it turns out. Recipe Book 4 is basically a rip off of Factoriopedia.
Well, that's actually really good though, because that means, if two different really smart people came to a similar conclusion about what the best way to do something is and the most user friendly, then that probably means you're onto something. So that's good. Are you going to publish then Recipe Book 4.0 for Space Age once it comes out, or is it going to be like completely useless?
It depends. Right now, Factoriopedia is not capable of replacing Recipe Book. There's a few things that are missing from it. But I want to try to make it so it can replace Recipe Book, because obviously having it built in is much easier and much better for everyone. So that's my long-term goal, is to deprecate Recipe Book entirely. But we'll see when 2.0 releases if that's the case or not.
Awesome.
I
Yeah,
don't have an
glad to
answer
hear
for you
that.
yet.
So with Recipe Book, one thing, getting into some of the nitty-gritty here with like game design and user design, I know we talked, and I think this was back with Recipe Book 2.0. At one point, I think I had either downloaded it, or I can't remember if we were talking before that about a different mod, but you and I were talking and you kind of mentioned Recipe Book, and I downloaded it and I tried it out, and I found it annoying because I had to click twice to get from item to item, whereas in FNEI it works a lot like the Minecraft. Well, it was inspired by Minecraft, NEI or JEI, which is not enough items or just enough items. And so it's FNEI, which is factorial, not enough items, for those who don't know the history of that. And basically, all you do is you right click and you left click if you want to see either recipes for the thing you're clicking on or usages for the thing you're clicking on. And with Recipe Book, it's really advanced, and you actually are either looking at an item, which then tells you properties of that item itself, such as like what recipes create that item or recipes that item is used in. But then when you click on the recipe that it's used in, that takes you to a recipe page, which is different than the item page. So then essentially, if you're clicking through, you have to click twice. You have to click on the recipe that it's used in, and then you have to click on the item that that recipe produces. Is there a faster way? Like, have you added in a shortcut to be able to just do one click between items?
Yeah, so that kind of exposes an engine particularity. When you have your crafting menu on in your inventory, a lot of people associate like a recipe with an item, and there's only one for each in that crafting menu. But there are actually two distinct things. There's the recipe, then there's the item, and then there's the entity and the fluid and the equipment. They're all completely separate classes and completely separate concepts. So one of my goals with Recipe Book is I wanted to combine FNEI's recipe browsing with what is it really used for as interface. And what is it really used for was the list of ingredient in and product of for a certain item. So I wanted both of those things. And the way that I found to do that was to just keep them separate. And yes, it had the two-click problem, but I don't really consider it a problem. I got used to it. However, Recipe Book 4 does have a solution for that, and so does Factoriopedia. If a recipe and an item and an entity all share the same internal prototype name, then they will be grouped together. For example, you'll have the transport belts. The transport belt recipe and item and entity all have the exact same like internal prototype name. And the item is the main product of that recipe, so it gets grouped with that recipe. Then the item's place result as an entity is that entity, and so it gets grouped with that. So Recipe Book 4, you click on transport belt, and it shows you the recipe, it shows you the belt speed, it shows you all the things it's used in, it shows you what unlocks it, all in one place.
That's really cool. Yeah, I love that. And I've found, I don't know when you added this feature, but the ability to alt-click on an item and pull up the recipe book for that has been game-changing in my Pi run that I've been doing. So that's been great. When did you add that?
I added that a little bit before Factoriopedia started, actually. The original hotkey, like you would use the recipe book's GUI hotkey on your keyboard on top of something to open it. I actually stole alt-click from Factoriopedia because it uses the same hotkey. So I saw that when I was playtesting 2.0. I was like, oh, that's way better. So I changed it to that.
Yeah, that's super handy because, you know, for those who have played modded Minecraft, that's how NEI and JEI work, is you just press a hotkey while you're looking at your inventory and mousing over an item, and then you can bring up either the usages or the ingredients for or recipes for that item. And that's, you know, kind of what I always wanted out of FNEI, and it wasn't able to do. You know, there's a hotkey to open FNEI, but it doesn't open to whatever you're looking at. And so there's always the step of having to type in something. So I've found that that change has made me enjoy Recipe Book a lot. And also, it's so much easier to look at a list of things an item is used in. So like Pionidon's ash, for example, is an ingredient in like 7,000 recipes because of the, you know, or sorry, it's a product of like 7,000 recipes, because when you burn things, it produces ash as a byproduct, essentially. And so being able to use Recipe Book to kind of glance through a bunch of those at once to see the ones that you actually want, whereas in FNEI, you just see a list of 7,000 and you can only see one at a time. And you're clicking that button like a maniac trying to find like the one recipe that isn't a voiding thing, but actually produces ash. Anyway, I've very much enjoyed Recipe Book 3.0. And for those of you listening, I highly recommend giving it a try. It's super handy. Even if you use FNEI, there is still a lot of reasons to use both. I've been using both in my Pi run. I think FNEI still has that snappy, like it can be really fast to just left click, right click, and you're just browsing through and seeing kind of the whole recipe tree of up and down a few levels really quick. But then Recipe Book can do all these things like looking at, oh, what are all the different uses for this item? And you can see them all in one screen rather than needing to page through 17 different screens. And that is really handy for something like Pionidons, where you're like, oh, should I make just the amount that I need right now of this metal? Or should I make extra of this metal? Like, when am I going to need more of it? And for what else am I going to need more of it? And I like to use Recipe Book for something like that. That's been really handy.
See, that's where I take issue with your complaint about two clicks, because FNEI requires 17 clicks.
Exactly. Well, and for that type of usage, I would agree that Recipe Book is far better. Yeah, exactly.
So I get it, yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts on Recipe Book in particular?
Yeah, Recipe Book, before I started working at Wube, Recipe Book was the single most complicated software I'd ever written. There's a lot going on behind the scenes to make it fast, and it caches everything locally. So like once you view a page and then you go back away from that page and back to it again, it doesn't recalculate everything. It keeps it all in cache. And that was my first, that's a technique called memoization. And that was my first introduction to that sort of thing. Like the more like having to keep the constraints in mind, because the factorial mod API can be kind of slow. And I also had to go through a bunch of effort to, like, instead of just using the game's API for displaying localized strings, I actually have to translate everything ahead of time before the GUI is even usable, because plain text strings are way faster than localized strings, like orders of magnitude faster. So Recipe Book is so performant because it's using plain text strings for the entire interface instead of the game's built-in stuff. Recipe Book 4 no longer does that because localized strings have gotten a lot faster. So you can actually open Recipe Book 4 before the translations are done, and there's a lot fewer translations to do.
That's awesome. With Recipe Book, I know one of the versions caused really long loading times. What was that, just because of it having to translate everything or localize everything, or how did that work?
Yeah, so another technique I used to speed up the usage of Recipe Book was I calculated everything ahead of time. For example, you have the iron plate. When the game loads, I go through all of the recipes in the game, and I do all of, like, the back references and stuff, say, hey, here's all the recipes that iron plates are used in, and I cache those all into the save file. That ended up being, while it made the GUI very fast to use, it ended up taking a lot more memory than I had anticipated. If you had the full Pyanodon suite, the save file would have like 100 megabytes of additional data from Recipe Book.
It was insane.
Nutty. So I eventually implemented a workaround where it actually doesn't save any of that anymore, and it reloads it all when you load the save file. That was quite a bit of work, and it actually causes a lot of problems with mod developers, because if you change any, like, for example, if you add a new recipe, or actually better yet, if you remove a recipe and then load a game without changing that mod's version, then Recipe Book will crash, because it has no way to know that the recipe changed ahead of time and abort loading in that case. There's a lot of things with, like, desynchronizations and multiplayer and stuff that's been a big problem. So Recipe Book 4 doesn't cache hardly anything, because it caches all of the groups. For example, the transport belt group that I talked about earlier, it caches that relationship into the save file, and it caches all the translations for the search, but everything else is calculated as you need it. So Recipe Book 4 is actually quite a bit slower than Recipe Book 3 to use, but it's usually not noticeable. It's only noticeable in, like, Pyanodons when you're looking at Ash recipes. That'll be a little bit of a hiccup when you open that page, but for the most part, it's a lot better designed and a lot more simple.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's so interesting, kind of the trade-offs that you have to figure out as a dev, because you're like, okay, well, I can make this thing perfectly snappy and it will never even lag for one frame when you're using it, but then it costs all these other resources, either on loading or saving or memory or you know, save file size. And yeah, it's just such an interesting trade-off that often we as the users, you know, we don't know any of that, right? We're just using the thing, and all we know is what we like and don't like. And so I'm sure there are times where people like me complain about certain features, and you're like, well, the thing is, maybe you're right, but it doesn't matter because I can't do it.
Right. It's like a really good example of that is logistic bots. A lot of people really wish that we could make logistic bots smarter, because logistic bots are really stupid. They're a little bit better in 2.0, but they're still not great. But the problem is logistic bots are very computationally expensive if you want to do anything even remotely fancy with them. So we have to make that trade-off of saying, hey, logistic bots are super limited, super simple. But the trade-off of that is that we get really decent runtime performance. You can have thousands and thousands of them without slowing down. Whereas in, like, Minecraft, for example, if you had thousands and thousands of entities in the same chunk, then it's going to blow up.
Yeah.
Factorio doesn't.
Yeah, that's one thing that, I mean, people just commonly talk about how much they love about Factorio is that it can run on a potato, you know, quote unquote, and it's just optimized to hell and back. And it really is noticeable, you know, when you're playing other games that are, you know, automation slash factory games, they just, even if they're optimized well, it's nothing like Factorio. And it's just, it's always so cool to be able to see under the hood, you know, the Friday facts over the years of just like, oh, we fixed this problem and now it runs five times faster and everyone's reading it. And we're like, I didn't even know that was a problem. And, you know, it's like, now we get even more frames per second, or, you know, potential updates per second, so to speak.
My favorite changelog line in the game, I'm trying to find it. There was something about like technology dependency resolution when loading the game. Our setting made it like 20,000 times faster.
That's
It was
insane.
nutty. I can't find the entry right now, unfortunately, but it's there somewhere.
I love it. And that 20,000 times probably only saves, you know what, a few milliseconds or something, but
Yeah.
it's fun to be able to say that. Okay, so slightly changing gears here back to the quality of life stuff, but more from a little bit of a game design perspective. I mean, you've made a lot of quality of life mods. So I looked through your profile on the mod portal website, and this isn't even all of them listed out, but just to name a few, there's recipe book, rate calculator, which is awesome, by the way, pipe visualizer, stats GUI, editor extensions, task list, tape line, blueprint tools, and there were like five or six more that, you know, are maybe a little bit more niche. So given how many quality of life mods you've made, how would you define quality of life? What's the difference between a quality of life and maybe a minor content mod, or what is the definition of that?
My definition of quality of life is a feature that makes a thing, something that's already possible, easier to do. Whereas a like change in the game is something that wasn't possible before. For example, like elevated rails are not quality of life because they're a whole new feature. Whereas for example, like the train groups, which was a mod I made and then it got added to 2.0, is a quality of life mod because sure you could copy paste your schedule between all the trains and get the same functionality. But that's a lot of work and it's a lot of tedium. So I made a mod to make that tedium less annoying, where you just change it on one train and it changes it for all the trains in that group. So that doesn't add any new functionality, it just makes the existing functionality easier.
Totally. What about something like squeak through? Would you define that as quality of life or not?
I think squeak through is cheating.
Okay, well.
Especially before the Spidertron existed, I would say that it had more of a place. But now that Spidertron exists and it explicitly lets you walk over buildings, I feel squeak through is too cheaty. Also, it's a mod compatibility nightmare because it changes the bounding boxes of everything in the game, and that can cause a lot of problems.
It does. Yeah, I've seen a lot of mod devs complain about squeak through, but I confess I'm a dirty cheater and I probably will be for a long time. I love squeak through.
How dare you?
I
Go
know.
ban your Factorio account real quick.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble with the teacher. One thing that's interesting though is it's like so there's almost like two categories of quality of life. And I even tried to differentiate this a little bit at one point in my own mod lists when I would, you know, start a playthrough of a heavily modded game of Factorio. You know, I've got 50 or 70 mods, and I wanted to categorize them a little bit between quality of life, and then there's obviously like the major content mods like Pionodons or Bob's Mods or, you know, something like that, where it's like, okay, this is obviously a content mod. It's changing the entire game. And then there's things like Squeak Through, which, okay, you know, arguably, yes, it is cheating in a way because you can now run in between buildings and you no longer have to design your factory around, you know, walkability. And so in that sense, it is giving you a new feature that you can now do, which is kind of fly, quote unquote, over buildings in a way when you're going in between them. So for something like that, it's almost like a helper mod. And it's not really adding new content, and it's also not just a quality of life mod, because like you said, that's more restricted to something that you can already do, but now it's just saving you clicks or saving you math or saving you know, copy pasting something, you know, and then there's, yeah, I don't know, it's just an interesting differentiation because it's still not quite a content mod. I would think something like Nanobots is a minor content mod. You know, it's like it's definitely cheaty in some ways, you know, quote unquote, where it's like, okay, now you can do some stuff way easier than you could before. And it adds a little bit of content in the sense that now you craft the nanobots and you craft the little machines. But then, yeah, it's almost like we need two quality of life categories. I'm trying to think about this.
It also depends on the person you ask. Everyone has a different opinion of what's fun. For example, some people consider rate calculator to be cheating because they're like, "Oh, doing the math is part of the game." A bold Viking, but I don't consider that cheating because I don't find doing math in my head very fun. I want to build the production lines and connect them all together and see it all flow and solve the like throughput issues. I don't want to do 2 + 2 × 5 plus the square root of 5 under the logarithm of 1, 2, 3, I don't know. But in my head, to build a yellow science setup, I just want to know, hey, select this many machines, how much does that produce? And hook everything up accordingly. That's the way I like to play the game. But a lot of other people like doing the math.
No, I'm with you. I very much use Rate Calculator for everything, literally almost everything. And I found the inserter throughput mod to be super handy in conjunction with it, because then I can easily, you know, use Rate Calculator on a building, see, okay, it outputs this many per second. Now I can see, is one inserter enough or do I need two inserters? So yeah, it's super handy, because I'm with you. I don't want to whip out the calculator or sit there and try to, you know, ballpark it in my head every single time I build a building. So I feel like things like Rate Calculator allow you to build close to, you know, perfect ratios with very little effort. And that's super handy. So when you're looking at quality of life mods and you get an idea, how do you know which ideas are worth pursuing to actually make a mod? Like, how many ideas have you pursued, all of them, and made mods for every single one? Or have there been ones where you're like, yeah, that's not worth it, or I don't want to?
There have been a few that didn't come to light. One that I can think of is additional pace settings. There's a mod for that already. I wanted to make my own version of that, but then I found that the existing mod did just enough for me that I didn't really want to spend the time to make my own version of it. I still maybe will do that someday, but it's like a low priority because existing mods serve that need well enough for me. And even though I know that the mod's not made as well as it could be because there's some better APIs they could use, stuff like that, it's all like trade-offs. Like you said, programming is all about trade-offs, and so is life. Like, hey, do I want to allocate like a week of my free time to make this mod, or do I want to go watch some anime instead? Like, everything's a decision.
These are hard questions, but speaking of, do I want to spend a week of my life making a mod? I mean, one thing you're known for is almost like religiously updating your mods. It's almost crazy to me how many times I've been like, oh, hey, there's this thing with your mod. And then like within an hour, you've already like pushed an update. As I was writing the show notes the other night, like I was going to the mod portal and looking at your mods. And literally while I was writing it, I went back to the page and you had like updated one of your mods. And I was like, oh, case in point, there he is again. How do you do it? How do you find the time to keep all these mods updated?
Mostly I write good software, so it doesn't break very much. But, it's actually funny you say that, because until this week or the last 2 weeks or so, I hadn't updated most of my mods for 6 months. Working at Wuba has severely decreased the amount of energy I have for programming because I spend it all at work. And then by the time I'm done working, the last thing I want to do is work more. So like, I love my job, don't get me wrong, but everyone has a battery. And I only have so many brain cells I can allocate to programming in a day. My anime watching has gotten a lot higher since working there because I use my brain all day at work and then I just need a break where I can shut my brain off and enjoy some crappy story. Yep. But, or a good story. There's good stories too. But yeah, it's a lot harder. I have over 24 mods, so it's quite a bit of work to maintain all of them, like even if it's just like an odd bug report here or there, because some of them like might require rewriting the whole thing from scratch. That happens a lot. Or some of them might just be, oh, that's not worth fixing because it'll take too much time and it's not that big a deal. There's some things like that as well.
Yeah. Do you ever regret, or have you ever regretted making a mod because of the maintenance and upkeep that it then requires?
Yes, LTN Manager. That's actually my mod. It's not on my mod portal anymore because I gave it away to somebody else because I didn't want to deal with it anymore. I don't use LTN. I feel like LTN is cheating. That's one of my personal definitions of cheating because it adds new functionality that I don't like. But that's just a mod that I did not want anything to do with anymore. I don't use LTN. I don't like LTN, so I didn't want to deal with that. I only made the mod in the first place because I wanted a complex GUI to work on to like test my GUI skills and make sure that I knew what I was doing. But once it was done, I just had no interest.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because it really is, you know, I've been a part of various game modding communities over the years, not doing the mod side, but just being on the forums or Discords or whatever. And it does, you know, users are very entitled when it comes to mods and updates. And I feel like being a modder, you subject yourself to some of the worst parts of humanity when it's like the minute a game update drops, people are like posting on the forums, like, update when?
Oh, man. When I posted the rate calculator rewrite like last year sometime, I got a lot of hate for it because people are like, oh, it broke my workflow. It's like spacebar heating XKCD. But to be fair to them, there were some features that I removed, but I ended up adding most of them back in the end. I wanted to try to keep it simple, but simple can be a detriment at some point. Yeah, it could definitely bring out the worst of people. I would say I haven't received any death threats yet, but I'm not crossing my fingers, especially since I'm a Factorio dev now. I'm sure there's going to be some people who are unhappy with one thing or another and want to make it known. I don't expect to receive any death threats because we have a perfectly wholesome community, but yeah, it's an interesting experience for sure. And it was a bit of a shock when I got so much hate for the rate calculator rewrite.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't remember, you know, because for a while I was using max rate calculator. In fact, until fairly recently, I was using max rate calculator over rate calculator. And you and I had some talks about that as well. And that with both FNEI and max rate calculator, I had found just this, they are completely bare bones and quick in a way that like zero of the information that's shown is something that I don't need, aka like it only shows me what I need. And your rate calculator had been like more advanced, and it took me a minute to, I didn't like the way it looked at first because the GUI is more advanced, and in some ways that's good, but in other ways it's like it didn't look like what I was used to, and I'm just an old man and I don't like change and shake my fist at the clouds, you know. And so I finally switched and my Pyanodons run, which started, I don't know, a couple months ago. Like, I switched partway through season two. Or did I switch in my freight forwarding? I don't remember now when I switched. But I switched, and I have really enjoyed rate calculator over max rate calculator since I switched. So I'm like, I should have switched a long time ago. But yeah, it is interesting how updates can break things for you. And, you know, something that you think as a mod dev is going to improve functionality for people is actually, like, going to make them mad.
Yeah, and on the topic of rate calculator, like, there's actually going to be another rewrite coming for that because I'm playtesting 2.0, and it really irks me that I can't use it on ghosts. So I'm going to be rewriting the whole mod to make it work with ghosts. And at the same time, I also kind of want to experiment with adding a matrix solver to it, so it'll just automatically figure out all the ratios for you. That's definitely a longer-term product or project, but it might happen in the near future because it'd be so nice to actually select your selection and see what it's actually doing instead of what it should do. But that might be straying too far into making it too complicated. So we'll see how that goes. But
yeah, that's a sweet idea. Sure.
Yeah.
And
a lot of people wanted like a zero net rates button on it because you could just click it and it would do it for you. And that sounds like a really nice and easy way to go about solving a system because you don't have to build it ahead of time. I don't like using like Factory Planner or HelmMod because I don't like spreadsheeting. I want to just build the thing. So that's why I like Rate Calculator so much. But I also want it to tell me what's actually happening sometimes.
Yeah, that would be sweet. So that it would basically take out all of the negatives and only like input the things that it can produce, and then it would just give you the final, like, this is actually what it'll make if you supply it with all the inputs kind of thing. That's sweet. One feature, you know, that rate calculator has that's really handy for those who don't know is you can combine different sections that aren't all a rectangle. So with max rate calculator, you can just do one selection of a rectangle. And so if you have buildings that aren't in a square or rectangle, you can like select some with max rate calc and then shift click a different selection. And that already has saved my bacon a few times. So that's super handy. I just found out about that only a few weeks ago. So yeah.
Oh yeah. My favorite way to use rate calculator is actually to make one building of each recipe and then shift click as many of them as I need until I get the ratios I want. So I know exactly how much of each building I need.
So you can add the same building into the selection multiple times?
Yeah. It doesn't keep track of buildings yet. That's something that I'll have to change. But Right now, it actually, when you select a building, it just adds the material rates. It doesn't keep track of the building itself. So you can shift left click the same building multiple times to keep adding it, or you can shift right click it to remove it. It just removes or adds the rates. It doesn't.
That's really cool. So when you fix that, it's going to break many people's workflow then, including your own.
it's going to be interesting because like I'm still in like the UI design phase of this right now of like deciding what I want to do. Because there's some things like, oh, it'd be cool if I could show the rates like on the entity in map. You could say, oh, this one's producing this. But that becomes a problem if you want to add the same machine multiple times, because then I'll have to add like a little times two or times three or whatever. Everything is a trade-off, and you have to make sure that the UI works out.
Yeah. So in the realm of just mod dev in general, what does your workflow look like from like the idea, you know, the inception of an idea, like with Tapeline or, you know, any of the other mods where it's like, okay, this feature, I want to make a mod that adds it. What does your workflow look like from that to the, I've now published it to the mod portal?
I've been pretty lucky so far in that most of my quality of life mods have just been vomiting code under the page until it worked. I didn't have very much like design phase for most of them. That's changed now that I've got a lot more software development experience. I've realized that there's some things that you should plan ahead of time. That's why I'm mocking up Rate Calculator 4 ahead of time instead of just going in blind. Because there's a lot of decisions I'm making now that will save me a lot of programming time later. But for the most part, it's just been throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks.
That's awesome. Well, you know, as many of us who play Factorio know, it's been successful. You know, I think you've had a really good pulse for what quality of life looks like, because almost every single one of your mods it's just really high quality. And I think that's something that probably you know, differentiates your quality of life mods from a lot of the ones out there, is just that it's made almost like you kind of, from the beginning, you were like, I'm going to do this right, rather than I'm just going to whip up some code that happens to work, which would be what I would do. And it would maybe work, but it would be, you know, 100 times slower than is possible, because either I don't know how to code it that way, or I don't care to spend the effort to code it that way. And, you know, you kind of dug in and you're like, I'm going to do this right. I'm going to do this effectively, and I'm going to make a mod that does what it's supposed to do efficiently. Do you think, I actually don't know, and maybe this is prying a little bit too much, so, you know, feel free to not answer, but did you apply to Woob, or did they approach you? Because was your mod dev like a big part of that, I guess, is what I'm curious about.
A lot of people have the impression that Woob just scoops up modders. That's not the case. They see like, oh, Arendelle is at Woob and Rygard's at Woob, but the reality is that I reached out to them. You have to, my favorite quote of all time is, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So I decided to take the shot. On Christmas Day 2022, I sent an email to Woob and said, hey, here's my credentials, here's my LinkedIn, here's my resume, here's all my mods that I've made for you guys. I already know you guys because I've had source access for years at that point. I want to work on your Linux support in the mod API. And that it took them about a month and a half to get back to me, because Woob moves slow at the speed that Woob moves sometimes. But I lucked out, and they said, yeah, this looks like a great fit, because we don't have a Linux dev right now, and so we'd love to have you on board. And since I had already talked with them, and I already had access to the code, I already sort of knew my way around the code base, and I'd already talked to a lot of them and personally before, that also helped a lot. I had a lot of stuff going for me. And that's why they brought me on, despite not having any open positions on the website.
That's really cool. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Have you found, because I presume you're remote working, right? Because you're Eastern time, US, you said.
No, I'm actually Mountain time. But yes, I am I am working remotely. The office is in Prague, and I'm actually going to Prague next month. It's going to be fun. But I work remotely from home, yeah.
Have you found that to be challenging, or have you enjoyed the kind of remote time zone difference stuff?
It's a little bit of both. I have very bad self-discipline. Like, for example, I actually woke up on time today because of this interview that we're doing. But most of the time, I usually wake up around noon or 1 p.m., which doesn't mesh well with my work schedule, because the way that meetings work, I have two meetings a week. and they're at 7 a.m. my time. So it doesn't work. My self-discipline is very bad. I need to work on it. But I also love working remotely because I'm very much an introvert. I like spending time alone. I pedal along in my little apartment and we just keep going.
That's awesome. Yeah, I feel that with the actually enjoying remote stuff. I've always enjoyed when I've been able to work remotely because it's like, yeah, I don't have to go anywhere. Not having a commute is great in my mind. Some people love their commute and I'm like, nope, anything more than 5 minutes is too long. So yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that stuff. A couple final questions I've got for you. What do you wish, and this is maybe a hard question, but what do you wish more people knew about Factorio?
That's a hard question. I should have thought about this earlier. I guess I'd say the thing, a lot of people like tend to like worship Wube for one reason or another, like, oh, the game is super optimized, or oh, they actually listen to the feedback, or oh, they're just really friendly overall. But nobody's perfect. There's a lot of stuff that goes on internally, and some of it is not perfect. There's a lot of processes that could be better. There's a lot of decisions that are made and the backtracked, and there's sometimes drama, Uncle Bob. But nobody's perfect. So please don't have this view of Wube as like these gods that actually make a good game. We're just people, and we make mistakes. And corporate speak, we endeavor to do the best that we possibly can.
Yeah, no, I actually really appreciate that. That's a good reminder because, you know, even in this podcast, you guys do a great job and they've done a great job over the years. But like you say, nobody's perfect. And I actually find it interesting that when we as end users I can't find the right word because worship's maybe a little bit too strong of a word. But when we over expect, you know, devs to do something really great, then often we're going to, you know, those expectations aren't going to be met once in a while because, like you say, nobody's perfect. And then we're more disappointed when that happens. I even find, you know, to go really sideways here for half a second, I find that's true in relationships, you know, with friends and family and, you know, partners and stuff. Like if you put them on too high of a pedestal, then you often don't leave as much room for their mistakes. And I think that's really important to leave room for mistakes from even those who are either above you in status or above you in skill, because, yeah, everybody's just a person, you know, and I think that's really important to remember. And, you know, when you're posting either a bug report or, you know, a dev does something wrong or, you know, something goes sideways, just remember there are people on the other side of that. Right now, there's a ton of drama with the Kerbal Space Program 2 community because nobody knows what's, you know, the Take Two is shutting down or whatever. I don't even know what's happening, but, you know, people are going mad on the forums. And it's like, yeah, you know, everybody that's reading what you're writing is a person. And obviously there have been some decisions from higher up that have not been good for the community and stuff, but it's just, it feels like people forget that it's people on the other side. It's not just an entity, you know, a company isn't a thing. It's a group of people just like you.
Right. Like a lot of people will say like, oh, boohoo, the multi-billion-dollar company isn't making as much money as it should. And we can get into that rabbit hole. But like every time that you criticize or like you criticism is good, like you need to have criticism, you need people to tell you what's wrong with what you're making, but when it comes down to personal attacks, that's when it's not great. Like you said, there's a person behind every username on the internet. Everyone has feelings, no matter how rich or poor they are, or whatever, you know, whatever demographics you want to make out of it, everyone has feelings and everyone's a human, and you can make fun of the thing, but don't make fun of the people. Like, yeah. For example, like Starfield is an objectively bad game, in my opinion. But I'm not going to go out and say, oh, the developers are terrible human beings because they made a bad game. No, like, there's probably a lot going on at Bethesda that I'm not privy to. And there's a lot that goes into a game. And having worked on a game myself now, I have a lot more empathy for those people. Because, like, yeah, making games is really hard. And when you release a game and everyone gives it terrible reviews and it falls over and like your code doesn't work, like that's not a good feeling. It's a terrible feeling. And it takes a lot to work through those feelings sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do not envy the Bethesda devs who worked on Starfield for, you know, 10 years to get the the reception that it got. Because I'm with you. I really don't think it's a great game. And, you know, that's a whole rabbit hole we could dive into. But, you know, maybe outside the scope of this podcast. But, yeah, it's tough. I can't imagine being those devs where it's like, oh, man. And I'm sure some of them knew what the problems were the whole time, but just couldn't get the traction, you know, to get those things changed or whatever. But anyway, one other question I had for you on the same vein, and maybe you've sort of already answered this. You know, you said, what's one thing you wish more people knew about Factorio? I was also going to ask, what's one thing you wish more people knew about mod development?
I would say probably the number one thing is that mod developing for Factorio is actually really easy. And if there's something that you want to see happen, you should go for it. We try to be very welcoming in the Discord community. So please don't hesitate to ask us questions. We'll try to help you out as best as we can. Factorio thrives because of its modding community. Like, if the game didn't support mods, I'm pretty sure the game would have died off by now. But we thrive because of our modding community, and we're very grateful to everyone for that. And I want everyone to know that, hey, if there's something that irks you about the game and there's not a mod that already exists to solve it, go for it. Give it a try. Who knows? Maybe you'll become the next greatest programmer of all time. Well, who knows?
No, I love that. And it, you know, case in point, I found that there was a lack of mods that made lamps better. There was a mod that made bigger lamps, but they were 2x2 in a different rest. And it's like, I don't want to change the entity. I just want my regular Factorio lamps to make their light in a much bigger radius, so I don't have to plop as many of them down. And that mod didn't exist. And I was like, okay, maybe I can do this. And I can't remember if I asked you for help on that. I definitely went to the modding Discord as well, and they were able to help me out. It's that one in particular was not a very difficult mod. It's literally, I think, one line of code. And then I turned it into a few extra lines of code to add a setting so users of the mod can make it even brighter or less bright. But for those of you who are listening, feel free to try out a Factorio mod. They're actually not that hard, and it's really easy to make mods that change small elements first, just to get your feet wet and like, how do I actually make the mod? How does it load? How do the file structures work with a mod? How can I upload it to the mod portal? And I feel like once you've done all of that, then it's a lot easier to learn some of the new steps of like, how do I actually code something that's changeable by the user in the mod settings menu, and how do I, you know, code something that might actually run a script during runtime and all of those things. So yeah, definitely, you know, if you're listening, try out making a mod. It's not as hard as you think.
Yeah, we put a lot of effort into the modding API, and I have a lot more respect for the people who made the modding API now, having seen it on the other side, because there's a lot that goes into it to make it as easy as it is.
Awesome. Yeah, well, are there any other thoughts you have before we start to wrap up the cast, Rygard?
Particularly. Look forward to Space Age. I'm having a blast playing it, and I'm sure you will too.
Oh, we're so jealous. We are all very excited. Thanks to you, Rygard. You've been an awesome community member. I know you and I have had multiple discussions over the years about your mods and about Factorio, and you've been great. And I'm so glad that Wuba, I think I've been pronouncing that wrong the whole time. Glad to have that lesson as well. Wuba is glad to have you as well, I'm sure. So thank you for being on the podcast.
That's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So if you'd like to support the podcast, you can head over to patreon.com/crydex. I'm so thankful to all of my patrons. You guys help keep the streams and podcasts alive. And, you know, there's just such a cool community around the Crydania Discord. Tons of people talk about things. People play board games. So come on over to the Discord and hang out. We'll have a great time together. Next week, I plan to stream at the same time, which is, well, I guess slightly different time than this week. Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, which is 3 p.m. UTC. I'll update the Discord if that changes. Rygard, what do you have cooking, or where can people find you, like socials or whatever?
I don't have much cooking. I mostly just keep my head down and work, but I do occasionally stream at twitch.tv/Rygard. I also have a website, rygard.me, where you can find all my links to like my various profiles for things if you want to take a look at that. But yeah, mostly I'm keeping to myself. I stream every so often if you want to come hang out.
And you also have a Discord, right?
Yes, I do have a Discord for my mods, but also some other stuff leaks in there from time to time. But feel free to come on over if you want and hang out. It's pretty laid back. There's only a couple hundred people, so it's pretty quiet. I look forward to seeing you there.
Awesome. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, Raghard. Thank you so much for your time and for hanging out on the podcast. For you listeners, if you have any questions, ideas for topics, or ideas for guests, please head over to the Crydania Discord and let me know there. I'll put a link in the description. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week. Always remember, the factory must grow.